Howdy do, buckaroos, and welcome to the after show. Here we are recording on February 24th, 2016. My name is Michael Rose. I'm joined, as always, by my partner in podcasting crime, the lovely, the talented, Ms. Kelly Guimond.
Hi, Mike.
How's it going, Kelly?
Great, because the word on the street is I'm lovely and talented.
It's weird. It's what everyone is saying. I cannot find my good headphones. Someone has absconded with them, so I'm using these crappy Panasonic headphones. And I have news to share. There's a bunch of little bits of news to share. We can talk about the big vacation. But first of all, we have to mention not yet a sponsor, Rogue Amoeba.
And, yes, we do.
And their application, Loopback.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, guys. So Loopback is the new application from Rogue Amoeba. Rogue Amoeba, if you don't know who they are, well, that's...
You actually do know who they are. You just don't know that you know.
You don't know yet that you know who they are.
You kind of do.
You do. They are the publishers of a whole slew of Mac audio utilities, including the venerable and multi-talented Audio Hijack. Formerly known as Audio Hijack Pro.
Audio Hijack.
Audio Hijack is amazing. And it's funny what happens when you type rogue, just rogue into a search bar. So yes, they publish a bunch of quality audio software for Mac OS X, including Audio Hijack, Fission, Airfoil, Nicecast, Piezo, and their newest application, Loopback. And what Loopback does is sort of all the virtual routers. Ambrosia used to make something that did this.
Yeah, SoundFlower?
SoundFlower, which has been the free sort of standard for this for a long time, basically allowing you to create virtual inputs and outputs. Or virtual outputs, really, but that become inputs for other applications, a patch bay for your Mac. So in the instance where you have something that is playing audio and a microphone and maybe another application entirely, and you'd like those to be all treated as though they are one input for your Skype or your FaceTime or your other conversational or recording style or broadcasting style app, Loopback can make that happen for you. And it is dead simple. It is available at rogueamoeba.com. There's a free download that you can try out, and the full version is available at an introductory price of $75.
Yeah, and so far I know a few other people who use it, and it's fantastic. And part of the reason it's fantastic is for people who don't really get kind of what a patch bay is, here's the breakdown, is that just now when the podcast started, you heard the theme. And I know you did because I heard it too. And usually you can't do that. Usually you have to take the raw, just Mike and I talking, into an editor, and then you have to add in the intro music and the outro music, or if you have sound effects or anything like that, you have to add that stuff by hand after the fact. And so this makes it so that you can route all of that into the same sound. So when the theme was playing just there tonight because of Loopback and the way that we're recording now, it means that when Mike hit play on the theme, he could hear it and I could hear it. And because it was being recorded, thanks to the magic of Loopback, all of you guys could hear it too. And as an added bonus, now we don't have to go back in and add that later.
It is saving us time. It is saving us money. It is helping preserve our vital bodily fluids. Also,
tremendous. So thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Paul, Paul and team over at Rogue Amoeba. Rogue Amoeba, RogueAmoeba. .com/loopback. Not a sponsor. Not yet a sponsor. We did have a not for resale license of Loopback, which Paul was kind enough to provide us, so we were testing it out. But other than that, not a sponsor, just satisfied customers. So
yes.
So anywho.
And while we're on the subject of satisfied customers, I'll tell you what I was doing before we were recording the show.
Yeah.
And that was I had to drop a new battery in my Roomba.
I'm sorry. That may be a like mean something different in Oregon, but out here on the East Coast, that's a euphemism.
Doesn't it mean you have a... Yeah, if you could drop a battery in your Roomba, you'd never leave the house. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yes. That's exactly what I'm saying. So, if I could drop my own Roomba battery, I'd have a spot in the circus.
You'd be going blind. Okay.
I'd have hair on my Boston Scientifics.
Okay.
Anyway, your Roomba, your actual literal Roomba.
Okay, so my Roomba was in need of an upgrade. So for Christmas, for people who okay, so let me just start at the absolute beginning. The Roomba is a little round vacuum that you can get that you don't have to run. Like, you just hit the button on it and it will run around your floor and vacuum for you. And I use one as sort of a supplementary vacuum. So it runs like once or twice a week. And then every 3 or 4 times it runs, then I go over it with the actual vacuum. It's just sort of a nice intermediary step, so I don't have to vacuum all the time, which is awesome. So we have this Roomba, and then for Christmas, I got an upgrade for it, and this is really cool. It's this little flat plate that you snap onto the top of your Roomba, and it makes it so that you can run it with your phone. Which for people who listen to me on Daily Observations and other stuff and have seen the stuff that I've written over at Mac Observer, I'm a huge home automation nerd. So somewhere, Mr. Kelly stumbled on this and decided that our Roomba should totally have one. And the other reason that it's awesome, at least for right now, the other reason that it's awesome is because it will send you notifications. So like, if you have your Roomba set to on a schedule, so like every Wednesday morning or whatever, it runs for you. If you have that set up, it will send you notification, Roomba started cleaning. And then while it's cleaning, it will also tell you, like, Roomba needs help. I don't remember what it actually says, but it's like,
help me.
What it means in Kelville is Roomba got stuck under the couch. And because the front of our couch has like the curved front, so it's lower in the middle than it is on the sides. And Roomba can get in on the sides, but not in the middle. So every so often it gets stuck under one of the downward slopes on the side of the couch.
Goodness.
So, yeah, talk about a first world problem. I start hearing boo-doo, boo-doo, and it's like the saddest noise. So I have to go like find Roomba and extract Roomba from whatever sort of shenanigans Roomba got into. Anyway, so that's the nice thing about this little plate on top is that it also makes it a little bit taller, so that happens less. But in running the Roomba, it became very clear because all of a sudden I would get all of these notifications. It would say Roomba has a low battery. Roomba has a 10% battery. Roomba has stopped cleaning. Like all at the same time, I would get all three of these notifications. So it turned out Roomba needed a new battery. So I ordered one. They're very commonly available. You can get them everywhere. And ordered it off Amazon because remember, if it's Prime, it's free. And so I picked up a battery on Amazon. It showed up and I was able to take the Leatherman Micra out of my pocket.
Yay.
Use the Phillips screwdriver attachment on my Leatherman Micra and unscrew the bottom of the Roomba and pull out the battery and pop in the new battery. And so it's charging right now, my new Roomba battery. And I was able to do that like no problem without having to go get the tools, because sometimes it feels like way more of a project if you have to go like locate the right tools for the job. And I'm totally an advocate of that if that's what you need to do, but like unscrewing 4 screws on the bottom of my Roomba was really not what I wanted to have to go get a screwdriver for. Right. And I didn't have to because I had one in my pocket because my Leatherman Micra is the best thing. And so I'm going to tout them, also not yet a sponsor, but Leatherman is awesome. They are local, and not only local, but like not far from where I actually live are their offices. So they're super cool. They make this new thing called the Tread, and it's like this killer, like it sort of looks like the links on a watch, like a wide watch band, but there's no watch. And each of the links is like a screwdriver or like a flathead screwdriver, and there's like another screwdriver, and they have like other tools for like repairing your bicycle and whatnot. So you can just wear this on your arm, and it like has gone through TSA security successfully on people's arms. You know, they take it off and put it in the tray or whatever, like a watch, and it makes it through security without hassling anybody. The Leatherman Tread, it's called, and it's super cool. But anyway, I really like Leatherman, and part of the reason I like them is because they make this little tiny one that's like a little bit longer than my thumb, and fits in my pocket and has like all these tools on it, and it's fantastic. So, yay. Thank you, Leatherman.
And now you have a robot vacuum that is working.
And now I have a very happy robot vacuum. At some point in the middle of the show, you will probably hear my phone go off because it will tell me that Roomba's battery is fully charged. So,
yeah. Well, I'm glad that...
But that's because I stay home and Roomba.
I'm glad that all the devices, the Internet of Things devices, are talking to one another. So, side note on Internet of Things, your Roomba may still be under your proximate control, your actual control, but there were two bits of news over the past couple days about the coming smart device revolution.
The rise of machines.
The rise of machines. number one, Alphabet division, the artist formerly known as Google,
yes,
has a company that is part of that conglomerate called Boston Scientific, mentioned in passing earlier.
It's terrifying.
They are former military, formerly developing robots for the military, now having moved on because that wasn't scary enough, and now working on developing robots for civilian applications. But yeah, they have a new standing robot, I believe, called Atlas. And you can find the video online. It's
everywhere.
It's quite something. This is a pretty resilient standing walking robot. A couple things that are new. Number one, it doesn't have a tether or power cord. It runs on batteries. Number two, it's very good at handling rough terrain or standing back up and staying on task. And number three, a good chunk of the video is the robot trying to pick up a box and carry it across the room, and a guy with a hockey stick knocking the box out of its hands and pushing it around.
And then at one point, he just pushes the robot over with the stick. Just like gives the robot a shove, and the robot just eats the dirt.
Yep. And then gets up.
And that's, to me, the most terrifying piece of the entire video.
But he keeps going with the hockey stick, pushing the robot back, and then like moving the box and having the robot following the box. And everyone who sees this says, yeah, this is going to be Exhibit A on the trial of humanity.
This is what everyone's going to point to when the world goes peak Terminator. This is where it happened.
This was the Skynet clock ticking over to zero.
Oh, right God, there. It was. It right totally there. Was. Yeah.
The other piece of it, too, today, I noticed that there was a story about the Nissan Leaf cars. I don't know if you saw this, but it turns out that the Nissan Leaf, which is an electric car, if you enable the app that is used to control the climate controls remotely and a few other functions, if you turn on that app, you can actually... All you need is the VIN number of the car, no password, no other authentication, and you can remotely do that. Anyone can remotely do it.
Oh, that's bad.
It's bad. So it apparently, according to friend of the show, Jamie Forrest, and USA Today, Nissan just turned it off.
Oh, good.
Yeah, this is an improvement.
Yes, a huge improvement.
Good so... Point. That's a big improvement. Yes.
Today in robotics, yeah.
Today in robotics, electric cars no longer allow you to turn on their heated seats remotely. So those are the unfortunate stories of Internet of Things and automation. There's a great human interest story I want to mention, but the positive and enthusiastic stories of robots and, or shall I say, audio animatronics are from...
Yeah, I was going to say, if you want to talk about a happy robot, let's start with Baymax.
I was at Disney World last week, and I did see the character greeting of Baymax. I didn't grab a picture of it.
Oh!
But they had character greetings for Baymax at Epcot in the otherwise decommissioned side of Innoventions West.
Oh, Innoventions West. It's such a wasteland over there.
There's a lot of wastelands. The Odyssey.
It's very sad. But they have all the space, and I get it. But, you know, come on. You've got all these buildings that just sort of sit there empty and age.
Well, and
it's really sad.
It is sad, but it's also the problem. It's the Tomorrowland conundrum affects Epcot more dramatically than some of the other parks.
Oh, sure.
Because as the unofficial guide to Disney World puts it, the future arrives differently than Disney thought it would look, and much faster than it was expected.
This is true.
It arrived suddenly and wrong.
Yes. But one of the things that I liked, and I unfortunately never got to see because it was gone by the time we got there, was the Home of the Future that used to be at Disneyland in California. And it was great. And I sort of love that mid-century take on the future.
Yes.
Like, I'm a sucker for that. Like, the whole
1950s, the 1950s look forward. Yeah.
Space age kind of stuff. Like, I love it. So to me, it wasn't a big deal that became a thing. So I want to hear all about your trip.
Okay.
Aside from the fact that you saw Baymax out in the world and I have not, and that makes me kind of sad.
Well, and it was interesting because it's of all the costumes that anybody could be in, basically that poor cast member was inside a giant inflatable sack.
Yes.
Which was adorable.
Yeah, but then there's that moment when, like, real life intrudes and you're like, wow, that seems like that would be for the new guy.
Yeah, like... oh, you're...
First so, in costume? Oh, you get to be Baymax.
So this may seem like an odd question for an interview, but how's your bladder? so, anyway. So, yes, my family and I were enjoying the magic. We went, we were very fortunate. We were scheduled to arrive pretty late on Saturday night. We had a flight out from New York City to Orlando. This is the lesson: on a day when you have a flight and you go to take a nap, bring your phone. Like, you know, don't not bring your phone. So at about, I went to take a little rest at about, 4 o'clock, 3:45, 4 o'clock, I got up. The flight was originally scheduled for like 8:45. Okay. So late flight. 3:45, 4 o'clock, I get up and when I look at my phone, I see a notification from JetBlue. Hi there, JetBlue, not yet a sponsor, JetBlue. flight is delayed. So the 8:45 flight was then gonna leave at 9:45. And that's gonna get us there pretty late. If you don't know, yeah.
You were already getting there late.
We're already getting there late. It's a 2.5 hour flight, 3 hour flight down there. We were already getting there late. Now we're going to get there really late. Mm. I was like, oh man. So I called JetBlue. I'm looking on the website. I'm trying to, and the agent was great. She's really helpful. And she's like, well, you know, there's, you know, you're flying on JFK. There's not really any other options there. I said, well, I see this flight out of LaGuardia. I see this flight out of LaGuardia. The flight's at 6 p.m. And she said, yeah. There's seats on that flight. There's at least 9 seats open on that flight.
Oh.
But you know, it's 4:15 p.m. now.
And LaGuardia, and you're home.
And we're home. And I sort of did a quick glance around the house, and I noticed that my spouse and my children, they weren't packed yet. They had organized their stuff, but they hadn't, like, put it in the suitcases. I was packed.
Oh, family.
I was like, come on, people. So I said, can we be ready to, like, to run out this door in 5 minutes? And everybody looks around like, guess so. I was like, okay, book it, JetBlue lady. So
you have 4 minutes, 50 seconds, and go.
Yeah, that's right. So she gives us the tickets. We, you know, Uberizing and running around like crazy people, and ran out the door, and there was traffic, and it was close, but we got to the airport at 5:05 for a 6 p.m. flight. TSA pre'd our way, you know, and like ice skating on butter through security, and we made the flight. So
that's
that was
awesome.
Exciting. Yeah, so we, like, you know, got there and were able to eat something and go to bed and get up bright and early for an 8 a.m. walking in the gates of the Magic Kingdom.
Yes. Okay.
So it was great.
So how was it?
It was wonderful. We rode the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, which was exciting. And yes, it's new. We did all the mountains. Like, we were done with all the mountains by...
Awesome.
By 10:30 a.m. It was a little chilly, and it was crowded. This is also the Sunday of President's Day weekend, so it got crowded.
Oh, yeah.
It did get pretty dense. But we had, I mean, by 3:30 p.m., we had seen, you know, we'd seen the highlights, we'd seen what we needed to see. And
yeah.
I actually was realizing, I didn't even think to look if 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea was still operating at the Magic Kingdom. I don't think it is.
It is not.
So good. So I didn't actually miss it.
Yeah.
But we went to the Hall of Presidents, and we went to It's a Small World, and we tried to ride Pirates of the Caribbean We were in line for an hour, and we were in sight of the loading area, and they closed.
And
the
it went down.
And it went down. It was very, very upsetting. That was the only real disappointment. But
well, let me tell you, it would have been disappointing if you'd gone, because it's like half the length of the one in California.
Mm.
Well, so it's like a 7-minute ride, and out here it's like 15.
It would have been really upsetting if we'd gotten stuck.
That's true. Well, yeah, not quite as upsetting as being stuck on Small World, which I've done. Well, I won't say done, which I have survived.
We did get stuck. Well, I'll tell you about the one ride we did get stuck on, but that was later. We had a lovely tour through the Magic Kingdom.
Awesome.
The kids were excited. We got to ride Aerial Ride. We got to
it's pretty great.
It was all pretty wonderful. I mean, it was hectic and crowded in the Hall of Presidents, which I dragged my family to. Everybody else is like, we really have to do this. So I'm like, yeah, we have to do this. Come on. And my Hall of Presidents story is that when I was 3, my family went to Disney World, and I was walking around the Hall of Presidents, and of course I was 3, I went underneath, this is in the waiting area, I went underneath the ropes, and I walked up to some of the panoramas and the displays, and I started reading the caption cards aloud, and attracted a small crowd.
Oh my God.
And at one point, a man said to me, "Hey kid, how old are you?" And I turned and looked him right in the eye, and I said, "I'm 11. I'm a midget." So he then was going around like telling other people, "Hey, check out this the kid. He's a midget. He's reading." And I went to my dad. I said, "Dad, that guy thinks I'm a midget."
So what I'm hearing here is you have a long history.
I have a long history. Long history of being a Weisenheimer at Disney World. But we went to see the Hall of Presidents, and it occurred to me that between November and January, the Imagineers are going to have some work to do.
Oh, yeah.
Because the current president is the only, as I presume, the only one, but who knows? But he's the only one in that exhibit who did his real voice, who recorded his actual voice, reading the oath of office for the Hall of Presidents. And the animatronic Obama, who doesn't really look like the real Obama, it's weird. But
he really doesn't.
And some of those presidents, man, like, you know, Andrew Jackson looks like he stuck his finger in a light socket.
Yeah, they could sometimes. I feel like they all kind of need a vacation from everyone else's vacations.
Yes.
And like, yeah, it's I don't feel like the Hall of Presidents gets the love that it deserves. So I think
Morgan Freeman narration, though, it's like it's so awesome. It's so fantastic.
Of course. Yes.
It's genius. Anyway, we had a lovely time in Magic Kingdom. Then we went, we took a nap. We came back to Epcot for dinner.
We
ate at the Biergarten in Germany, which was ausgezeichnet. It was delightful. And both my wife and I.
You can vouch for its authenticity because you are a regular visitor to Germany.
Well, I can vouch for the authenticity of the food. The food was quite authentic and quite good. And the environment is very much Bavarian, Southern Germany, Lederhosen and Oompa bands. But the staff, you know, in Epcot, most of the World Showcase pavilions, most of the World Showcase zones are staffed by natives, by folks from those countries. So at the stores in Germany and at the restaurant in Germany, it's all German kids, German college students, German people working there. So because my wife and I both speak German, we were chatting with our server in German, and he was beside himself. He was so excited.
Oh, that's so awesome.
It was adorable. Was so cute. And we actually sent my father-in-law and his wife, and he speaks German, so we sent them several days later, a couple days later, to go to Germany, and they had a great time. It was day one was Magic Kingdom and dinner in Epcot. Day two, I thought was going to be Epcot. That was my plan. And then I looked at our fast passes and our restaurant reservations. I said, wait a minute. These aren't for today. These are for tomorrow.
Oh, no.
Which we discovered at breakfast. So we called an audible And we went to Universal Studios on President's Day. It was crowded, but it was a lot of fun. And we got to do the big Harry Potter rides, which were a big thing for the whole family. We did Gringotts. We did the Forbidden Journey or Forgotten Journey.
Now there's a whole thing there now that is there that was not there when you and I went.
This is correct. So that when you and I went, Islands of Adventure and Hogsmeade was the only Harry Potter land, Wizarding World of Harry Potter. So now they have built Diagon Alley.
I know.
And Nocturne Alley.
I know.
Which are the Wizarding Town. And you're walking on the backlot at Universal Studios. So Universal Studios is built out like a Hollywood backlot. So there's a New York Street and there's a whole San Francisco area and then of course there's Marvel. No, there's the Simpsons area.
Yeah.
And you can actually get a Krusty Burger. Nobody was getting Krusty Burgers. Everyone was getting the Bee Tacos. and you can get the donuts. You can get Duff Beer. But there's also real cityscapes and so forth. So when you walk from San Francisco to London, there's London and it's all London facades, including Grimald Place, where if you look up in the window, you can see Creature peeking out the window every now and then. But you walk into...
I'm dying.
You walk into a building and then the building is a false front and on the back, you get out the other side and you're in Diagon Alley. And it's really impressively themed. It's really well done. And there's all these spots where you can wave your $45 wand and trigger little things, trigger things happening, water spraying or things moving around. So it's incredibly cool. It's incredibly funky. And...
That's amazing.
We rode Gringotts, which is pretty. It's got its moments. We walked around. We bought candy, and we did did all the stuff, and we bought.
Yeah.
And both my kids bought T-shirts, and older daughter Lulu. I don't know if you saw this picture on the Facebooks. She has a T-shirt that says former resident of Azkaban, approach with caution, do not use magic on this person. But she also, both of them, got temporary tattoos of the Dark Mark, which they now have on their arms.
That's hilarious.
It is hilarious. Yeah, and the staffers, the folks managing retail inside Nocturne Alley, which is the dark side of Diagon Alley.
The seedy underbelly, yes.
they're like dressed in gothic, magical fashion, and they're walking around this store being entirely surly and just like grouchy. It's awesome.
That's the best. Oh my God, we have to go to Florida.
Oh, it's so fantastic. Anyway, so we did, we traipsed all over Universal. It was crowded. It was hot. It was challenging. We rode the Dragon Challenge, the Hungarian Horntail.
Oh, yeah. The Dragon Challenge was super fun.
Oh, remember remember Pablo getting sick almost? Yeah, he did get sick because he rode it five times. Sick. Yeah, anyway.
he did get sick, and I rode it again.
those are some serious roller coasters. Anyway, but what you recall, the Forbidden Journey.
Yes.
And for listeners, Kelly and I got to go to Hogsmeade under circumstances where it was very, very lightly attended. It was a corporate event, so we were able to ride the rides as much as we wanted.
Basically, yeah.
Oh, anyway, we rode the Forbidden Journey, and at one point, the ride did stop. And, you're hanging in midair.
Yeah.
In your cart, in your basket, and then the lights came on.
Oh!
So that was weird. It really sort of taking away the suspension.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
It was very odd. I mean, you could see the outside walls. You could see the exit doors and a bunch of power strips on the floor. And we happened to be positioned over the a dragon's wing, so it was still moving. Doing its thing, but you could see, very clearly everything around it.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. Anyway.
That's one of those things that, makes me feel like, partly, I really want to see it, and partly, I really don't.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm totally with you. Like, I've had the opportunity to ride Space Mountain with the lights on.
Oh, that's a thing. I should have mentioned that up top.
And it is very weird. It's almost scarier when you can see how close you are to all the other track.
Well, but so Space Mountain, this is a point of some contention in the family. So both my wife, both Heidi and I recall as children going to Disney World and riding Space Mountain and being scared pantsless.
Yeah.
Because it was essentially entirely dark.
Yeah.
And you like, could...
They sort of broadcast space on it.
Yeah. But it's there's like Christmas lights and stars, but you cannot see...
Can't see a thing.
You can't see the track in front of you. So, yeah. So that was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, or 35 years ago, 30 odd years ago, early on. And we both had a very similar experience. We both said, wow, it was really scary. It was really dark. Very scary.
Yes.
We went together in the mid-90s to Disney World. And we rode Space Mountain again. And we came away saying, wow, that was not nearly as scary because it was brighter.
Huh.
And you could see the track. And you could see where you got a sense of where you were going. And we both said, wow, that's not as scary as it was when we were kids. Then we went last week. And we said to the girls, like, hey, we're going to do Space Mountain. It's awesome. It's not that bad. It's not that scary.
Super fun. Yeah.
Super fun. Went now, in.
Are they Star Wars-ing it in Florida?
Not yet.
Okay.
They will be, I'm sure, at some
point. Then you've missed out, and I'm sad for that, but Space Mountain is still really awesome.
Well, in any case, we got on the ride, go up the launch thing, hit the first hill, and we both realize they've gone and turned down the dimmer again. So it was dark again. And it is... scary as all get out. And Heidi got off and is like, I don't like it. It's too scary for me at that light level. They turned it down again. And we both were like, yep, that is distinctly different from how we remembered it from mid-90s. So yeah. I don't know what's going on, but yeah, something had changed. So anyway, yeah. So that was Space Mountain. Magic Kingdom, Universal, then back to Epcot. On the Tuesday,
yeah,
had a great time at Epcot. Got to do Spaceship Earth. Spent a lot of time at the in the Seas Pavilion. We got to see them.
The Seas is pretty awesome.
Got to see them feed the manta rays, and
oh, that's cool.
It was really cool.
You got to have lunch last time. It's been a long time since we've been. But when we went last time, we managed to get a reservation to have lunch and sit next to the tank.
Yeah, we were pretty far back, but we were in that restaurant. So yeah,
it was pretty neat.
It's pretty awesome. So we had a good time at Epcot and visited Japan, visited England, walked to Canada, had dinner in Canada, walked to Germany. We did most of the rides. We did Test Track, which is great. And I'll tell you what, the consensus most popular ride. Well, I don't know by consensus. One of the most popular rides was the Sum of All Thrills, which is a simulator ride, but it's inside Inventions. And what it is you design either a roller coaster, or bobsled, or jet ride. You design your path, and you manage the energy, and you virtually set it up. And then they're like, okay, let's try it out. And they strap you into a two-seater crane simulator. So very similar to what's actually... holding the cars, holding the passenger spaces in the Gringotts and the Forbidden Journey ride. It's basically a cart on the end of a robot arm.
Yeah.
But so now this is a two-person cart on the end of this arm. Oh, and if you have put an inverted loop in your ride, this thing is going to turn you upside down.
That is so awesome.
It is something. It is really...
Oh, man. Oh,
it's really something. So, yeah. So, that was fantastic. I think we
would have done that again. That sounds amazing.
And then it was... we stayed late at the park. There were extra magic hours for Epcot. So, we ended up riding Mission Space, last thing we did before we left. And there was, again, a family split between Mission Space Green... and Mission Space Orange. I rode Mission Space Orange with the older one, and Heidi rode Mission Space Green twice with the younger one. So Mission Space Green, Mission Space, for those who have not experienced it, is the Gary Sinise hosted Mars mission simulator ride. And it is one that is, again, somewhat controversial because several years ago there were a couple of fatalities, people who died shortly after riding the ride. It's not clear that the ride was in any way causative of that, but one of the things that happened after that was that Disney split the two simulators into two different experiences.
Right.
So one of them, Green, now does not, it moves, but it does not spin. This is a centrifuge ride at heart.
It's like less intense.
Yeah, way less intense. Mission Space Orange, you are sitting in a centrifuge box and you feel the G-forces. You get pushed down into your seat. And they warn you. They say, look straight ahead. Don't turn your head. You know, here's where the vomit bags are.
Warnings are abundant.
This is a very intense experience. I always get a little queasy on Mission Space Orange, but I did it. My daughter was like, this is the best thing ever. I would do it again. It's fantastic. Oh, yeah. She thought it was, she was our thrill monkey junkie the whole time. And then the last day there, we went to Animal Kingdom and had a lovely time and Expedition Everest. That is not messing around. That is one serious roller coaster.
Oh yeah, it was stupendous. I loved it.
It's like you're going forward, then you stop, then you're going backward in the dark.
Yes. You go back through the dark. It's so awesome.
It was something.
I'm feeling like now we need to meet you guys in California.
Oh.
And then Lulu and I can just go ride California Screamin' like all afternoon. And, you know, you guys can all go ride the teacups with Mr. Kelly. Or Splash Mountain or whatever. And her and I will just go rock that roller coaster like all afternoon. It's my favorite. I love it. It's magnetic track. Ooh. Number one. It's magnetic track. So there's no ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk as you go up the hill. Number two, it starts on the edge of Paradise Pier. So you get loaded up and then they send you down and you sort of sit in the water. Like, you're right, like, the track is just below, is just at water level. So you're sort of sitting in the water, and, like, there's people on the pier who are seeing the roller coaster go out there, and you're like, wow, this is really, and then they launch you. And you go from zero to whatever, however fast it is that California Screamin' goes in, like, no time. Like, literally every time I ride it, that first few seconds I can't breathe. It goes that fast. And then the next thing you know, you're all the way up the first hill and you start to come down, and it's one of those real steep ones so that like your tummy feels funny all the way down. So awesome. And then you're off to the races. It's so great. And then it goes upside down later on, and it's fantastic. It's so much fun.
Oof.
Oh yeah. It's stupendous. I absolutely love it. Yeah. It's one of the things that makes it worth crossing the Esplanade to me to go from Disneyland over to California Adventure. There isn't much over there that makes me quite as happy as California Screamin'. I really like the Toy Story ride, and the Ariel ride is over there, which is kind of nice. But most of the other like e-ticket stuff and things that are over in California Adventure, I don't really, for the most part, I don't enjoy them the way I enjoy the stuff at Disneyland. So California Screamin' is amazing, and it makes me really happy. It's super, super fun. I can't recommend it highly enough.
What about Soarin'?
Soarin' is fun, but I've done it, and they don't really update the ride film that often.
Like, well, they're doing it now. I mean, it's in process right now. It's closed in Orlando right now because they're doing
it. Yeah. So I dig Soarin', but I find that it's not really a fun experience for me unless I sit in the front row.
Interesting.
Because I then end up low enough that like all I see is people's feet. From where I'm sitting. So I end up like watching everybody else, you know, like waiting to see whose flip flop falls off. You know? Like that's what I'm doing. Like I'm not watching the video. I do like it though, and it's a lot of fun, and I really enjoy watching it as it's happening. But it's sort of one of those rides where, like, for me, like, I've done it, and so, like, last time we went, the line was ridiculous, and then the ride went down entirely. But I wasn't sad that we didn't get to see it. But I've done it a bunch. I mean, to be fair, I've done it like a whole lot. So I've certainly ridden it at least my share of riding. So, I mean, it's a lot of fun, and I really like the effect of it, you know, as you come over the hill and as they hit the golf ball at you with the Mickey Mouse on it and the whole thing, like, all of that is really great. But, I'm more excited about the new ride film. Just like I'm really excited about Star Tours. So,
yep.
Because now Star Tours is one that makes me happy no matter what. It made me happy even before they updated it. And I knew it was junky, and I knew you could, like, basically see the strings on everything, and I knew the ride cars weren't in the best shape, and I knew the video wasn't in the best shape, and it was, like, you know, standard definition, and on and on and on, and I did not care, because it was the Death Star trench, and I got to do it, and it was basically the most amazing thing. And now, in the new version, I have been the Rebel Spy.
Ooh.
Which is very exciting. And I'm more excited. I'm more excited now that the newest film has been out for a little while, because they were basically showing the same little clip of it as part of the Star Tours ride.
Hmm.
You sort of got this bit in the middle that sort of alluded to Episode 7. So I'm excited to see what Episode 7 is actually going to add to the experience now that the movie's been out for a little while and they don't have to worry so much about giving something away.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to as far as Star Tours goes. And that's one of the things that I loved about Star Tours in the first place, even long, long ago as a little kid, when they announced it in the first place. One of the things I loved about it was that is so amazing. And this was still in the days when everybody assumed Episode 7 would be the next thing.
Yeah.
So there was still a pretty good chance that we were just going to get another movie after Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, we weren't going to go backwards in time.
Yeah. So at that time, I just remember getting to go on it, and like, it hadn't been open very long. We waited like 2 hours in that line in the summer, and there was no such thing as a fast pass, and there was no such thing as an indoor queue. And I remember getting inside and getting a good look around and seeing that the whole thing was based on, like, you get to make a trip to another place. And I just remember thinking what a great idea that was, because when they make more movies, we'll just get to go to more places. And they probably don't take you everywhere now, so they can make more of them later, and that'll be even better. And I remember being so excited about it, and then the film never changed.
Yeah.
So I was really excited when they revamped it, and it makes me really happy that it's a thing now. And I can't wait to see where it ultimately ends up going. And I really dig it. It's a lot of fun. And in California, some of the stuff that you didn't get to see that I got to see when I was there at Christmas was that they've basically Star Wars'd almost all of Tomorrowland. So in Tomorrowland at Disneyland, Tomorrowland has the Star Wars ride. The Star Tours ride. And then it has a theater where they were playing Captain EO for a long time. It was Captain EO initially, and then they swapped that out with Honey, I Shrunk the Audience. And yep. Then after Michael Jackson passed away, they brought back Captain EO, and I went and saw it. And it was oddly both better and worse than I remember it as a kid. I'm not sure how that's possible.
How do they manage that? We don't know.
Yeah, but there you have it. And then now it shows, I don't know if they're still showing the same thing, but it was sort of this collection of moments from all six of the movies, and then they basically show the trailer at the end for Star Wars. So the Paths of the Jedi or something like that, they're calling it. And they talk about the Jedi and the journey that they take from Episode 1 through Episode 6. And then at the end, they sort of show this trailer for Episode 7. And that was kind of the end of it. But that's next door to Space Mountain, which now has a Star Wars overlay in California, which is called Hyperspace Mountain. And it's super awesome. And you're basically one of the X-Wings that is tagging along in a dogfight. And, like, off in the distance is a Star Destroyer. I don't think it's a Super Star Destroyer. I think it's just a regular Star Destroyer. And there's this Star Destroyer off in the distance, and TIE fighters start coming out of it, and they start chasing you, and now you have to fight with the TIE fighters, and then, you know, up and down and dodge, and it's super, super fun. And as you go up the tunnel, when you first go up the tunnel, as they're like, you know, in the olden days, it was like countdown to launch, they just play the opening fanfare from Star Wars. So it's basically my favorite ride.
Well, I was astonished by the amount of Star Wars. The amount of Star Wars merch. And this is something that I think happened when we were there together, when we were at Disney together some years ago. I was surprised by the amount of Muppets Disney crossover merch. And now I was stunned. I shouldn't have been surprised at all, but
no.
The amount of Star Wars stuff, including Stitch as Yoda,
yep,
Mickey as a Jedi, Goofy as Kylo Ren, just a ridiculous amount of stuff going on.
Yeah, they used to have Goofy as Vader. They've had some of the crossover character stuff for a while. Somewhere I have a set of those, and somewhere I have a set of Muppets as Star Wars as well. The thing that made me the happiest about Star Trader, which is the gift shop at the end of Star Tours, is that they had a women's section for shirts for girls and dresses and skirts and all sorts of things for you if you are female and maybe not 11. And it was terribly exciting because that didn't used to be a thing. And like a whole lot of my Star Wars shirts, because of course I have many, a whole lot of my Star Wars shirts are either stuff I scored in the kids section at some store, like, you know, because an XL boys shirt from Target fits me. I'm not sure what that says about which group of those people, whether it's adult Kelly or little
teenage
Kate,
boys.
Like apparently, yeah. So I have more in common with 12-year-old boys than I previously thought, which was that I like Star Wars and comic books and video games. And anyway, so I either score an extra large shirt out of, you know, Target or whatever occasionally, or it's a men's shirt, and then I just get a small one and sort of hope that it doesn't, like, hang weird on my body. And these were actual women's shirts, and I was ridiculously excited. So I have this really amazing R2-D2 shirt that is super, super awesome. It's long-sleeved, and so down the arms, it's, like, R2's arms, and then the whole front is, like, R2's front, and it comes with a hood. It's fantastic. And I got like a tank top with R2-D2 on it, and I got a black t-shirt that has the Star Wars logo written across it with lightsabers, and it glows in the dark.
Nice.
And I felt compelled to buy it because I couldn't believe they made a shirt for women that glowed in the dark, because, you know, that's not a thing. And so I was really happy to find out that it was a thing. And so Merry Christmas, Kelly, because we were there right before Christmas, like December 21st and 22nd is when we were there. So that was awesome. And I was super excited. And there was so much other stuff there that I did not buy. Like, they have a Princess Leia hoodie of the white dress. So you pull the hood up and bam, Danish ears. It's really great. I actually put it on so that my friend could take a picture of me because he thought it was amazing. And there's like lots and lots of stuff for girls. And I was just so pleased to see that because it was such a nice change. So
one of my girls got, one of our girls got a BB-8 dress.
Oh, I love the BB-8 dress.
Yes. She's very excited about it. But we were trying to make it out without too much merch, but that's where we ended up. And you know, it was fun. It was chaotic and crazy and expensive and all those things, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I would go back. And So that's the Disney report. Is there anything that I did not mention that you were curious about, whether it was the case at Disney World?
Were they playing John Williams music in the Magic Kingdom in Tomorrowland?
I seem to recall them playing some John Williams music in Tomorrowland.
Because it's like exclusively John Williams in California, which is really funny.
I don't think they, I mean, I think they're mostly doing that in Disney's Hollywood studios, which we did not go to because we didn't have a lot. We ran out of time and they haven't, I mean, they're building the Star Wars land. It's going to be awesome, but it doesn't exist yet.
No.
So we did not get over there.
Okay. Where else did you eat besides the Coral Reef?
Coral Reef, Germany, and Le Cellier in Canada,
Yeah.
which was delicioso.
It's amazing to eat at Le Cellier. Yeah,
it was very good. And we got a funnel cake at the American Pavilion, and we're walking down the promenade when a younger daughter was assaulted by a seagull.
Oh my God.
Who flew over her shoulder, grabbed her funnel cake, her entire funnel cake, and flew away with it. And Heidi turned to the funnel cake booth, and the woman just waved her over, gave her a new funnel cake. Heidi's like, "Does that happen often?" Woman's like, "Mm-hmm, yes."
Oh my God.
Yes. So that
was the kind of thing that would happen to me.
It was crazy. I mean, this is like big seagull, not that big kid, and just like went for it. And we came back. 15 minutes later, and you could see the powdered sugar outlines on the ground, like chalk forensics.
Oh my gosh.
It was nuts. It was nuts. We're already into our second hour or almost, and I have to we're gonna have to call it a night. But I want to mention something.
Yes.
So I don't know how many people read the New York Times, the Venn diagram of After Show listeners and New York Times readers, not yet determined. But if you were to look at the New York Times for February 24th in the arts section, the front page of the arts section is a story about some friends of mine, Georg Friedrich Haas and Melina Williams Haas, spouses, husband and wife, and also wonderful artists and creative people and fantastic, delightful people who also happen to be fairly kinky. And this is a bit of a landmark for the New York Times, covering people who are you know, alternative lifestyle folk, in a very, very positive, very sort of even-handed light. And Melina and Georg are wonderful. It's a great story. Their love story is a great love story. And if you're interested in looking them up, you can find it in the New York Times for February 24th in the arts section. Highly recommended. It's not often that I can say, "Hey, my friends are in the paper." Even if I lived in a smaller town, I guess it would happen more often, but it's pretty big town here. So anyway, I wanted to share that. Anything, Kelly, where can the people find you? Any new projects you would like to share?
I'm just doing a lot of stuff for App Camp for Girls right now. So I've been doing that.
Woohoo!
It's super awesome. I'm so excited. Like, yeah, I can't wait to tell you guys about, once we have some stuff that's finalized, that's like definitive, then I can totally tell people more about it. But in the meantime, you can go to the website, which is appcamp4girls.org. And you can check out, you know, who we are and what we're up to and the kind of stuff that we're working on. And it's a lot of fun. It's so the greatest thing. And it's been really great to see. We actually had a kind of a reunion event for a lot of the campers and found out that some of the stuff that the girls have gone on to do. And they all sort of said that it was spending the week at App Camp that gave them sort of the confidence and the the faith in themselves to go forth and do some of the stuff that they were doing. And it was super amazing to get to see like what some of them have done. And so that was really, really great. It was a lot of fun. So far, I think that's probably all I have going right now. I'm always looking for a new home automation thing, because I love being able to run stuff with my phone at my house. So if you have a hot tip for that, if you have something that works really awesomely, or you've heard about something that works really awesomely, or you work on something that you think is really awesome, make sure you let us know about it. And Otherwise, you can occasionally find me over at Mac Observer. The last couple of weeks on Daily Observations, we've talked a little bit about some of the Apple FBI stuff. And I've been told that I have some very interesting points of view on that. Not that they're crazy or anything, but just that some of the conclusions that I've come to are apparently really informative to some other people. So you can check me out there.
Nice. Well, and we didn't even talk about FBI OS. We'll probably talk about it a little bit on our next show.
No, we'll have another show.
We'll have another show for that too. Today was all about the things that make us happy. You can find me on the Twitters at Mike T. Rose. I will be in California next week in San Jose. So if folks are around and want to try to connect, we'd be happy to do that. For my colleague Kelly Gumont and for all our listeners, this has been The After Show. We are glad to have you, glad to be back, and we will talk to you again soon.